بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the most merciful, the most compassionate.
عبس وتولى.
He frowned and turned away.
أن جاءه الأعمى.
That the blind man came to him.
The opening remark is quite ambivalent. Apparently, it is addressed to the Prophet, peace be upon him, indicating that he had acted indifferently towards the blind man. Yet the terms of the address are impersonal, suggesting that it was done by someone other than the Prophet, peace be upon him. Implicitly, he is told that it was beneath him to have done so. Those familiar with his excellent conduct would have thought that such behavior would have come from someone else. As already stated in the surah's introduction, the blind man is none other than the famous companion Ibn Maktum. In his Al-Istiyab, Ibn Abdul-Barr, and in his Al-Isaba, Ibn Hajar, clarify that he was a maternal cousin of Khadija, the Prophet's wife. His mother, Maktum, was the sister of Khadija's father, Khuwaylid. Given this, the charge that the Prophet, peace be upon him, neglected him as a lowly, poor person, and that he focused his attention only on the Meccan chiefs, is untenable. For Ibn Maktum, too, was a member of a noble family and the Prophet's own brother-in-law. The Prophet, peace be upon him, may not have given him due attention, it appears, in view of his physical blindness, a point highlighted in the Quran as well. He thought that the conversion of a single Meccan chief to Islam would be more valuable than this blind man's. Furthermore, his disability would render him unable to play a major role in Islam's spread. Hence, the Prophet, peace be upon him, resented his interruption, saying that he could consult him later.
وَمَا يُدْرِيكَ لَعَلَّهُ يَزَّكَّى.
How could you know? Perhaps he would cleanse himself.
أَوْ يَذَّكَّرُ فَتَنْفَعَهُ الذِّكْرَى.
Or he might be mindful and good counsel might avail him.
أَمَّا مَنِ اسْتَغْنَى.
Now he who waxes indifferent.
فَأَنْتَ لَهُ تَصَدَّى.
You attend to him.
وَمَا عَلَيْكَ أَلَّا يَزَّكَّى.
Though you are not to blame if he would not cleanse himself.
وَأَمَّا مَنْ جَاءَكَ يَسْعَى.
But he who comes to you running.
وَهُوَ يَخْشَى.
And fears Allah.
فَأَنْتَ عَنْهُ تَلَهَّى.
You pay no heed to him.
This was the main point missed by the Prophet, peace be upon him, at that stage in his preaching. To press home the same, Allah first censures him for his attitude towards Ibn Maktum. Then he clarifies that a preacher should give more attention to a sincere seeker of truth than to those who are not. One who is engaged in his quest for faith, who fears Allah's displeasure, and takes pains to visit the Prophet, peace be upon him, lest he be swayed by falsehood, is much more valuable. In sharp contrast to him, another person may not display any such sincerity or inclination towards the straight way. The two are not to be adjudged in terms of their usefulness to the cause of faith. The one and only criterion is their readiness to accept faith. One willing to embrace faith alone is valuable, though he may be blind, lame, or a pauper. He may not be physically fit to serve the cause of faith, yet he is more important and valuable. The main objective of the call to the truth is to guide human beings. Since a seeker is ready to greet guidance, he should be warmly and heartily welcomed. Clearly, then, those who are not sincere, but who may well be very influential members of society, should not be run after by the preacher. It would be nothing but a waste of time and energy to try to win over those who are not inclined towards the truth. If they are not ready to accept guidance, they themselves will suffer. The preacher is not answerable for their misconduct.
كلا إنها تذكرة.
No, indeed. This is only a reminder. No, indeed.
The words, "No, indeed," here are indicative of God's directive to the prophet, peace be upon him, not to show undue deference to those who are heedless of him on account of their worldly eminence. For Islam's teachings should not be presented as though the prophet, peace be upon him, were abjectly begging those who had spurned it to now honor him by accepting it. Also, it did not become the Prophet, peace be upon him, to invite such arrogant people to Islam in such a way as might give rise to the misconception that their acceptance of Islam would serve the Prophet's own interests. Nor was it appropriate that they be made to feel so important that if they accepted Islam, it would prosper as a result. If they did not, then Islam would court disaster. Islam cares as little for them as they care for it. This is only a reminder. In other words, the Quran. So whoso wills may give heed to it. It is contained in scrolls, highly honored. Most exalted and purified. This is to stress that the scrolls which embody the revelation were free of impurity. These scrolls expound nothing but unadulterated truth, because false or corrupt ideas and doctrines have not been able to find their way into them. Born by the hands of scribes. The scribes mentioned here denote the angels who were charged under God's own guidance with writing down the scrolls of the Quran. This is so as to safeguard them and faithfully convey them to the Prophet, peace be upon him. These angels are dubbed as the most exalted and purified. The first appellation underscores their impeccable honesty and integrity. Any tampering with the trust placed with them is out of the question. The second appellation stresses the truth that they perfectly discharge the duty of inscribing, guarding, and transmitting the divine scrolls to God's messengers. Noble and purified. It is clear from the context that these verses do not merely proclaim the glory of the Quran. Rather, these plainly tell the arrogant unbelievers that the Quran is too elevated a book to be presented before them. The Quran has no need of them. On the contrary, it is in their own interests to accept and follow the Quran. They should better mend their ways and submit themselves to the Quran. If they do not care about the divine book, it too hardly cares for them. Their rejection will not dilute its glory. However, it will result in bringing disgrace upon them.
قُتِلَ الْإِنسَانُ مَا أَكْفَرَهُ.
Accursed be man. How stubbornly he denies the truth. Accursed. From here on, God's reprimand is addressed directly to the unbelievers who were disregarding the truth. Prior to this, from the surah's opening verse to verse 16, the discourse seems to be addressed to the Prophet, peace be upon him, but it was in actual fact meant to reprimand the unbelievers. This reprimand, however, was implicit. It consisted of asking the Prophet, peace be upon him, why he had paid such scant attention to a genuine seeker of the truth, and instead directed his entire focus on those who were worthless from the point of view of his mission. These unbelievers had gone too far in opposing the truth to merit that the Prophet, peace be upon him, should present before them something as exalted as the Quran. Be man. This Quranic reference does not necessarily cover each and every member of the human community. Rather, the reference is to the evil ones whose misconduct is reproached. The generic term man is employed insofar as much reprehensible traits are found in most human beings. A general term is also used in order to avoid specifically naming the culprits who may grow in their aversion and stubbornness. For further details, see Ha Mim Al-Sajda 41, note 65, and Al-Shura 42, note 75. How stubbornly he denies the truth. Alternatively, this may be rendered in the form of a question. What prompted man to deny the truth? On what basis does man commit such an outrageous act? Denial in this context refers to rejecting the truth, being ungrateful to the benefactor's numerous bounties, and rebellion against one's Creator, Sustainer, and Lord. Out of what did Allah create him? Out of a sperm drop did He create him, and then determined a measure for him. Out of a sperm drop did He... Man should better first reflect on the matter out of which Allah has created him. Likewise, he should think where he was conceived and nourished and how he was born. He should also bring to mind his utter helplessness as a baby. How can man disregard his abject origin and rise in revolt against his own Creator? The same truth is enunciated in verses 77 to 78 of Surah Yasin. He created him and then determined a measure for him. Man's course of life is decreed even when he is within his mother's womb. The reference here is to gender, complexion, height, and physical stature, limbs, including any defect, outward appearance, mental faculties, and family background. Man's upbringing, the influences in formative years, and his own personality development during his early years are predetermined in that he has no choice in such matters. He cannot change what has already been ordained for him. Since man is so helpless regarding the course of his own life, it is all the more audacious of him to rise in revolt against his Creator. And then made the course of life easy for him. And then made the course of life easy for him. Allah has provided man with all these means and resources on which he draws for his survival. His physical and mental faculties would have been of no avail if the all-wise Creator had not put in place these resources on earth. It is He who has made prospects available for man. Furthermore, it is Allah who has granted man free will to choose between good and evil, gratitude and ingratitude, and obedience and rebellion. He has facilitated man's pursuit of either way. Then He caused him to die and brought him to the grave. Not only in matters of his birth and fate is man totally helpless, but also with regard to his death. He has no choice in his birth or death. He cannot defer his death, as he is bound to die on a date, time, and place preordained for him. Nor does he have any control over his burial. He may be buried in the depths of the earth, ocean, be consumed by fire, or in the belly of a beast. Not one human being can alter the Lord's decree about the why, how, or when of his death. And then, whenever He wishes, He will raise him back to life. Man does not have the power to refuse to rise when the Creator resurrects him. Just as he was not consulted about his own birth, so also his resurrection is not a matter of choice. He will rise from the dead, no matter how much he might resent it. He is totally helpless before his Creator's might and power. His refusal will not make any difference, as he will be resurrected at the Lord's command. Nay, but man did not fulfill what Allah had enjoined upon him. What Allah had enjoined upon man embraces all those commands that are manifest as divine signs, those commands revealed through the scriptures and messengers, and the ones promoted by the pious in every age. For further discussion, see Al-Dhar 76, note 5. In the face of the truths and signs spelled out in these verses, man should have unquestioningly obeyed his Lord. However, it is the height of man's temerity that he has taken to the path of disobedience and rebellion. In essence, he refuses to fulfill his obligations as Allah's servant. So let man just consider his food. man should reflect on his food, specifically on how it is produced, even though he takes food items for granted. Had Allah not provided all the means and conditions suited for its production, man could not grow food of his own volition. We poured water, pouring it in great abundance. We poured water, pouring it in great abundance. The reference here is to rainwater. Countless vapors rise from the oceans owing to sunlight, which turn into thick clouds, which, in turn, are scattered across each region by winds. These vapors turn into water at a low temperature. This results in rainfall in various regions in perfect measure. Some rainwater returns to the water cycle through wells and springs, flows as rivers, and turns into ice on mountains. Rivers flow throughout the year, even when it does not rain. Has man put all these elaborate arrangements in place? If Allah had not provided all this, man could not survive on earth. And cleaved the earth, cleaving it asunder. And cleaved the earth, cleaving it asunder. Again, it is Allah who has cleaved the earth asunder and caused the grain to grow out of it. This cleaving enables seeds, saplings, and all other forms to go inside the earth and eventually to grow out as grain and plants. Man may, at most, till the land and sow seeds which have been created by Allah. The growth of plant life is accomplished by Allah. It is He who has created countless varieties of seeds that blossom into flowers, fruits, and plants. He has invested seeds with the ability to grow. Again, it is He who sustains each and every plant species, providing the best conditions for its growth. He has enabled soil to let seeds blossom into young plants. Had He not given man seeds with their unique characteristics and layers of soil with potential for growth, man could not grow any food. Then caused the grain to grow out of it, together with grapes and vegetables, and olives and palms, and dense orchards, and fruits and pastures, all this as a provision for you and your cattle. All this as a provision for you and your cattle. Allah has produced all this provision for both human beings and cattle. Man draws heavily upon cattle for obtaining meat, fat, milk, and butter, apart from using them for transport. Animals are of immense importance for the economy. It does not befit man to use, on the one hand, all these resources and provisions, and on the other, to disobey the Lord who has given him all this for sustenance. فَإِذَا جَاءَتِ
الصَّاخَّةُ But when the deafening cry shall be sounded, but when the deafening cry shall be sounded.
The deafening cry refers to the final blowing of the trumpet, which will lead to the resurrection of the dead.
يَوْمَ يَفِرُّ الْمَرْءُ مِنْ أَخِيهِ
On the day when each man shall flee from his brother,
وَأُمِّهِ وَأَبِيهِ
And his mother and his father,
وصاحبته وبنيه
And his consort and his children, and his consort and his children.
The same point also features in verses 10 to 14 of Surah Al-Miraj. That man will flee underscores the point that far from helping his near and dear ones in distress on the Day of Judgment, he will instead flee from them, lest they invoke his help. Or the verse might mean that these evildoers, disregardful of Allah and the hereafter, were engrossed in sin and misled one another. However, on being faced with the dire consequences of their misdeeds, they will flee from one another, lest they lay the burden of their sins upon them. Brothers, mothers, fathers, husbands, and wives will desert one another. They will apprehend their testimony against them.
لِكُلِّ امْرِئٍ مِّنْهُمْ يَوْمَئِذٍ شَأْنٌ يُغْنِيهِ.
On that day, each will be occupied with his own business, making him oblivious of all save himself. Making him oblivious of all save himself.
It is stated in several ahadith with different chains of narrators that the Prophet, peace be upon him, informed, on the day of judgment, all will be resurrected in their stark naked bodily forms. Upon hearing this, one of his wives, probably Aisha or Sauda, or another woman present, nervously asked whether their private parts will be exposed on the day. In response, the Prophet, peace be upon him, recited the above verse, adding that no one would have the poise to look at others on that day.
Some faces on that day shall be beaming with happiness, and be cheerful and joyous. Some faces on that day shall be dust-ridden, enveloped by darkness. These will be the unbelievers, the wicked.